Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Kimmy from the 12 Steps, 12 Traditions group in Allentown.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name's Kim, and I'm an alcoholic. Jack Davis, thank you for asking me to speak tonight. You know, I was just thinking about what I was going to say on the way down here, and I wanted to talk about a little bit about this group. Before I get into that, let me back it up a minute. I have a home group, 12 Steps, 12 Traditions, and we meet every Thursday at 7 p.m. in Allentown, Pennsylvania. It's a really good meeting, so if you can come and join us, that would be awesome. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor people today. But what I wanted to say about this group, this is where I found a spiritual solution to my sickness. And actually, I was at the first meeting that this group opened, and it wasn't in this facility. It was in a different facility. It was in Sellersville, I think it was. And I was at the very first meeting. And a guy named Steve Farnsworth was speaking that night. And he was really just I felt like he was talking to me because I was in Alcoholics Anonymous and I was kind of fading away and I wasn't interested in Alcoholics Anonymous. But he talked about his experience in Alcoholics Anonymous and he talked about how he started fading away but that there was a solution. And that really, really interests me. So that's why this group is really special to me. And I'll talk a little bit more about it in my story. But it really is. And I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to see some familiar faces. And so I'm going to just kind of launch into it here. I was thinking, you know, I was really good at drinking, and I loved drinking before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had a lot of really good times when I drank, but I had a lot of not so good times when I drank. And especially probably in the last 6 months of my drinking, it wasn't really a lot of fun at all. But some other things that that came with my drinking, for instance, was, you know, I really loved to drive drunk. And I thought I was really good at it, too, until I flipped the car and got a DUI, you know, then I kind of figured out, you know what, maybe I'm not so good at this. But I also was good at getting hangovers, right? And I was good at having blackouts. And I was good at manipulating, and I was good at lying, and I was good at stealing, you know, all these wonderful attributes that come with my disease, right? I was really, really good at a lot of that stuff. I used people to get what I wanted, and, you know, that's just what came with it. So, and I really didn't want to stop. I didn't know I wanted to stop until I hit my bottom, and I'm going to talk just briefly about my last drink. But that's when I realized that I wanted to stop, but I didn't know how. I didn't know how to stop. But I did know that Alcoholics Anonymous could help me because rewind to 6 months prior to my bottom, someone had introduced me to the program. So anyway, I'll talk a little bit about that. I kind of get myself, I can get all over the place. But so so my last drink, I wanted to talk about that because I don't want to ever forget my last drink. And it wasn't the worst thing I've done while I was drinking. It certainly wasn't the best thing. But it was what normal people just don't do. So anyway, it was April. Oh, by the way, my sobriety date is April 19th, 2003. And so I was out Good Friday, April 18th, and I got out of work like around 1 o'clock. And I went over to the firehouse. If you guys are familiar with firehouses, they're similar to VFWs. You can drink really, really cheap. And that's what I ended up doing. I got out of work early. I went over there, and I met my family. My family was there. So I did grow up in an alcoholic family, too. But anyway, that doesn't make me an alcoholic. So I met them there, and, you know, I proceeded to drink from probably, I want to say, maybe 1 to 7 or 1 to 8. So almost a good 8-hour shift of drinking. And I really wasn't ready to go. And, you know, we just got the party started. You know, once I have one, you know, that's never enough. 1,000, you know, is one's too much and 1,000's never enough, right? So my partner at that time was coming over to meet me to have a couple drinks. And, you know, they came over maybe around 6 o'clock, had a couple drinks and said, you know, we need to go. And I'm like, all right, you know, let's go. I really didn't want to go, so I reluctantly went. And, you know, all in my mind, I'm scheming on how I'm going to get my next drink because I don't want to go home. You know, you just started me up, and I want to continue to drink because that's what I love to do, and I'm good at it, right? So so we're driving home, and, you know, I'm trying to manipulate and trying to think, how am I going to be able to, you know, stop at a bar and, you know, get what I want, really. You know, the selfish and self-centeredness is really rearing its ugly head. And I said, you know, I'm really hungry. What if we, like, stop at so-and-so, which is a bar and restaurant, and we go and have something to eat? And, you know, I'm not hungry and I don't want to eat. And they totally are on to me. And they said, you know what, why don't you just go home and we can get something to eat at home? And I'm like, yeah, you know, that's not going to do it. I don't want to go home. Cause I really wasn't an at home drinker. I was a big bar drinker. So, you know, we're at the stop sign. I could see the bar over to the left of me. And we go through the stop sign, through the intersection, and, you know, they're not going to stop for me. So I took it into my own hands and opened up the door and jumped out the door while the car was moving. And it wasn't moving fast, but it was moving. So I had to, like, kind of duck and roll and, you know, kind of, like, get my stature and get up and kind of walk away. And I'm like, oh, so now I know they're going to come back. Come pick me up, and then we're going to go over to that bar because I did this. And no, they just never came back. So anyway, you know, and then from that moment on, that whole evening was a total blackout. I don't remember how I got home. If I made it over to that bar, I'm sure I did. I'm sure I made it to a couple of bars that night, and I don't remember, total blackout. So fast forward to the next day, next morning, I don't even think it was morning, I think it was afternoon. I'm on the couch in my living room, fully clothed. And, you know, you just kind of open your eye, and you look around, and you're like, oh, okay, so this is familiar. I see I'm in my living room, but I'm like, why am I not in my bed, and why are all these clothes on? So that was kind of confusing to me, and I'm kind of just picking myself up, and I'm like, ooh, God, my elbow hurts, my knee hurts. I'm like, wow, why do I hurt? And then I kind of get up and, look out the door. Cause you know, I always have to look for my car. You know, I never know if it's there, if it's not, if it's on the yard or what. And, I saw the car is there, but I didn't drive anyway, but now it's all starting to come back to me. It's like, oh no, you remember you were at the club, you jumped out of the car to get something to drink, and it's all coming back to me. And I just had that moment of clarity, and I know you've heard this before, and some of you I'm sure have experienced this. I started just scratching my head thinking, I wonder if normal people jump out of a car door to get another drink. I wonder if that's what they do. And I'm thinking, no. And I immediately thought of my neighbors, Karen and Dan. And I'm thinking, I don't think either one of them would jump out of a car to get a drink. You know? I just a moment of clarity. And, you know, I was 38 years old. I mean, a 38-year woman jumping out of a car to get a drink, it's just not normal. So at that moment, I'm like, you know, I wonder if I have a drinking problem. And I knew deep down inside, you know, I did. So I saw my partner, I said, hey, you know, I want to talk to you. I'm really sorry. And, you know, all the remorse that comes with all that drinking and the apologizing. And, you know, they're like, yeah, what? You know, I said, do you think I have a drinking problem? And in all these years we were together probably for, I want to say maybe 7 years at that time. Never once did they ever say anything about my drinking. And I think they were really smart about that because I think they knew how protective I was about my drinking. But at that moment, I said something and they said, yeah, you know, I really do think you have a problem drinking. And I was like, ah. So now I want to rewind it to 6 months ago, prior to that was my bottom. So I want to rewind to 6 months prior to my bottom, and a really good friend of mine, Mark, he lives in Atlanta, and we have been friends since high school, and every time I would see him, it was always a party, and I would go down and see him in Atlanta, and that's all we did, is like, well, I would get down there on Friday, and I'd party all the way till Sunday or Monday morning and get back on a plane and come back home. And I was, you know, usually a mess, and he was a mess. But he had said, you know, Kim, I am trying to get clean and sober. And I was like, what? Really? He's like, yeah. And I would like if you could come down this weekend. He said, I'm getting out of rehab, and I need to go to meetings. And I was just wondering if you would come down and, you know, just hang out and be a friend and go to these meetings with me. And I'm like, all right. I was thinking, well, why not? I didn't really know about Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know what it all meant. I didn't know that it meant that, you know, he was going to permanently stop. So I went down, and you know, we went to all different types of meetings. You know, we went to AA meetings, we went to CMA meetings, we went to NA meetings. But I got to tell you, when I was in an AA meeting, I felt a calmness when I was there. I felt a feeling that this is familiar, but I can't explain it. It just felt familiar to me, and I felt at ease. And the only other time I can explain that feeling is when I first got high. And I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but the first thing I picked up was marijuana, and that led me to a drink. But I remember that first time that I got stoned, and I was like, you know, where have you been all my life? I don't know how I did life without you. And I felt maybe not that strong of a feeling like I did when I got high, but I felt that feeling. I felt like I was comfortable. I couldn't really explain it, and I didn't want to talk to Mark about it, really, because he had the problem. I didn't. So anyway, that seed was planted when I was down there. And so fast forward back to my last drink, I was thinking, wow, I think there's a place that I can go that can help me with this problem that I have. So that's when I launched out to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started to go, and I just went to a select few meetings, and I probably did that for the first 2.5 years. I went to 2 meetings a week, and I went to these meetings that I really was comfortable at, and you know, they were discussion meetings. And, you know, the first year was really, really amazing for me. And I know people talk about the pink cloud, but I felt like I had a pink cloud. You know, there's a lot of suggestions, and there's, you know, 12 strong suggestions here. But I really wasn't worried about these in the beginning. You know, that was way too much work, and I really didn't understand them. They were way too complicated. What I was going to do is just not drink and come to meetings. And one other thing I did, you know, the first day I came to a meeting and I went home is I prayed. And I did that because it's easy, right? I mean, it's a lot easier than those things looked. You just get on your hands and knees and you just pray for, you know, a couple of minutes to this God that I don't know who he is. So those are the three things I did. And, you know, I have to say I did get a sponsor by name. But I don't even know if she was taken through this 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I just said, you know, I have a sponsor. So I did those four things, right? And like I said, the first year was really awesome for me. Cause what I ended up doing is, I ended up doing a lot of things that I never could follow through with. So, you know, I was the kind of person that would join a gym and never go, you know. I would talk about going to college and taking college classes, but was so full of fear and, you know, just never would follow through with it. There were things that I wanted to do. I wanted to learn how to golf. You know, there was just things that I wanted to do that I just couldn't do when I was drinking. And I did those things. The first year, I mean, I was like crazy at it. I took classes. I learned how to golf. I was going on vacation sober. So I was experiencing a lot of things for the first time sober. And that was so foreign to me. So, so foreign. But you can do it. I mean, it's crazy. You know, you can have do these fun things while you're sober. And also something that I really picked up in the first year was I was people. So I wasn't judging people. I was getting to know them from the inside out rather than the outside in. Because my friends were all pretty much similar to me, you know, and how much can you really learn when people are exactly the same as you? You know, we all kind of were similar. I'll just let it at that. We were all just pretty similar. And now I was getting to, you know, meet people and learn what these people were all about from the inside, from their emotions, from their feelings, when I never talked about that stuff. I never talked about that stuff with my friends. You know, I still have a couple of close friends that aren't in the program, but the rest of them, you know, I didn't know anything about their families. And I, quite frankly, I didn't really even care. But now I'm getting to know people, and I'm getting to know their innermost feelings, and I'm getting to know, I don't know actually what they drive or where they work or where they live. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. So we're this mix of people that normally wouldn't mix, right? That are coming together and I'm learning from you. Which was very different for me because all we did was hang around. All the same people hung around together and we really weren't learning much from each other except for, you know, who could drink the most or who's going to buy this or who's going to do that. So those are the things that I learned in the first year that I think were really, really, you know, valuable for me. But so as we progress into my program, you know, 2.5 years, I'm sitting in that meeting and, you know, this is where Steve Farnsworth really, it stuck out when he said this to me or to the group, but I felt like he was talking to me, right? You know, that he felt like he was dying in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I felt like I was at that fork in the road where I was going to either drink or I didn't know what else there was to do because I felt like I was doing this AA thing. I felt like I was doing it. But a friend of mine that was in the same meeting as me and said, that's when she had said, let's go down to this meeting. I heard it's supposed to be really fun. It's supposed to, you know, there's a lot of good people that are going to be there, good speaker, this, that, and the other thing. And I'm like, all right. So, you know, I got out of my little zip code and I came down and, you know, people were walking around with big books and they were talking about the solution. And that's not something that I was used to. Maybe it was at that meeting, but perhaps I just didn't hear it. But I heard it at this meeting. My ears were open, and I knew I wanted what you people had. And I was afraid to ask someone to be my sponsor, so I just kind of kept coming back to the meetings and kind of listening and hanging out on the fringe. And, you know, maybe about 2 or 3 months into it, I got the courage to ask somebody to be my sponsor. And that person kindly declined. they said that they were moving out of the state and that they couldn't sponsor me, and I was devastated. I was like, oh man. You know, I heard what this person had to say, and I really, really just liked what he had to say and hit the energy about him. And he said, but wait, I have this other person who would be happy to take you through the steps. And that's when I met Jack Davis. And he was really, you know, I looked at him and I'm like, I don't even know what I have in common with this guy. And, you know, I don't know if this is the right thing to do. And anyway, I just said, yeah, fine, let's do it. You know, that's how desperate I was. I was just, whatever was happening, I felt like, you know what, I just needed to roll with it. And a couple of ground rules that were put down for me basically was said, you know, my job is to take you through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to hold your hand, and then I'm going to place it in God's hand. And then you need to do this as well. You need to turn around and be able to take other people through the steps. And, you know what I told you? I was good at all those things, but I was also, you know, good at taking too. And I was never really much of a giver. And that just kind of went against my grain, you know, having to try to give something away. And, you know, I was like, all right, well, I'm in, but I don't know if I'm going to be, you know, on that delivery part, but I never said anything about that, you know? So I wanted to get what everybody had, but I wasn't sure if I was buying all this, let's give it away. So anyway, so we launched out on the 12 steps and, you know, I'm not going to take you through the 12 steps, but I do want to talk about my fourth and fifth. Because this really was a pivotal moment for me, and this is where I had my spiritual experience, and this is where my perception changed. So we go through my fourth and fifth, and you know, we talk about my fifth. And I'm down in Sellersville, and you know, going through all this. These resentments and my inventory and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I'm totally as honest as I can be, you know, transparent. You could see right through me. And we start, you know, we talk about everything that's on the paper, and then we talk about everything that's not on the paper and all the deep, dark secrets that I have. And I just get totally honest. Everything that I could think of, I discuss and I share. So I, you know, we wrap it up and I start driving home. It's probably a 30-minute ride home. And, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, so where's this sense of relief? And, you know, where is this, you know, weight lifted off me? I want to feel awesome. You know, I did this with this guy I don't really even know. And I don't know what he's going to do with my stuff. And, you know, just I was more like an exposed raw nerve driving home. I was. And so I'm driving home and I'm like, you know, I'm going to call my partner and I'm going to talk about it. And my partner's not available. I'm like, So I'm like stuck with my thoughts all the way home. And then I start freaking out about, well, well, what's my partner doing? Why aren't they available? You know, they're probably cheating on me, blah, blah, blah. You know, all these crazy thoughts that, you know, just are just crazy, just start, you know, flowing in because I'm scared. I'm full of fear. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's happening. And I don't know if I'm necessarily trusting the process. So I get home, I take my hour, you know, as I was instructed, and I wake up and I still feel, I don't feel any relief. I don't feel any relief. And now I'm feeling like my partner's cheating on me for whatever reason. So I'm going to work and I'm like besides myself, you know, not feeling any relief, just full of fear, not knowing what to do. And you know, that night I came home, and I remember you people talk about praying to God and asking God to help you. You know, I've never did that before. I never got on my hands and knees and just said, God, can you help me through this particular situation? Can you please help me? Because the God that I was praying to, I really wasn't connected to any God. I wasn't. I still did not have a connection after 2.5 years of being in this program. At least I didn't feel like I did. You know, there were some, I think my spirit was waking up, so to speak, but I didn't feel like I had a conscious contact. I just didn't. I didn't feel like I had that. So, you know, I'm praying to God and I'm asking to help me. So another a night of agony, and I wake up the next day and it happened to be the weekend. And, again, you know, I'm full of fear and I'm just, you know, not feeling this relief. And so in the meantime, too, you know, while I think my partner's, you know, cheating on me, you know, I am thinking about all the ways of how, you know, we're not going to go here because I think the person that, you know, they may be cheating with may be there. So we're not going to go there. We're going to go here. And we're, you know, just plotting and planning and all these crazy ideas, and we're not even going anywhere. And I'm doing all this crazy controlled thinking. It was just insane. It was insane. So I'm driving to the gym, and Whitney Houston was on the radio, and I'll never forget, A Greatest Love of All. And, you know, this is the God's honest truth. I felt this warm something come over my whole entire body. And it just let me know that I was not in control of the situation. And it just made me feel that things are going to be okay. It's going to be okay, Kim. It's going to be okay. You know, no matter what you do to try to control a situation, they're going to do what they're going to do, right? I can't control it. But the feeling that came over me was I wasn't running the universe anymore. You know, I just didn't have control. I wasn't that powerful. I wasn't that powerful. And at that moment, I'm like, oh, you know what? I think I'm getting the third step now, because I didn't really get the third step when we went through it. But now I'm getting it. I'm getting it. I'm getting the third step. That's when I felt like a whole sack of bricks just fly from my shoulders. I'm crying. The, you know, Whitney Houston's singing. And I'm driving to the gym, you know, now because I'm going to the gym. I'm going to the gym regularly. And I'm not really an emotional person, and I still have problems with my emotions, but I am bawling. And I go and I have a great workout, and you know, I call my partner and said, you know, I had this experience and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. I think you might be cheating on me. And they're like, you're crazy. You know, it's not, it's the furthest thing, you know, that could be happening. But, you know, this is how my mind goes. And, you know, I call my sponsor, and my sponsor's like, thank God, you know, like, this is awesome. You know, thank you so much for sharing this with me. But that's when I felt like I had a conscious contact with God. I felt, bam, was I so connected at that moment. It was just amazing, amazing. And I got to tell you, you know, when I was growing up, I felt that I was connected to a God. like my parents were never religious, and we had a very chaotic alcoholic family. So for me to get solace, I would leave my house, go across the street, go to the top of the hill, and there's a big field up there, and I could just sit up there, and I could look out, you know, over the treetops, over the tree, over the houses. I could see the sky, I could see the sun, and I just felt that peace when I was a kid. That's where I would go to feel peaceful. So I felt like my spirit was awake when I was a kid. But then drugs and alcohol came into my life, and I feel that's when things just dampened. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, it started to wake up again. And that moment totally just plugged me in, and I was in. I'm like, all right, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to do the next steps. You know, what's going on? Amends, yes, let's do these things. You know, I was really, really, you know, rocking and rolling. So I had a great experience going through the steps. I had a spiritual awakening, and there was, you know, small spiritual experiences along the way. And, you know, and I did what he told me to do, and I did go out there and I started helping people. And, you know, it was awkward and I was scared, but I had, you know, I was on the phone to my sponsor asking him what I needed to do, you know, and that's how it worked. And I got more familiar with taking people through the steps and more familiar with taking people through the steps. And you know what, the way I took someone through the steps the first time is very, very, very much different than I take them through today. You know, I had to learn a lot. So I have about 20 minutes left, and I thought, you know, there was a couple of things I wanted to try to talk about. And Paul, I saw Paul at a AA picnic. And so fast forward to, like, you know, 6 months prior to now, okay? So I'm going to just talk about what's been recently going on in my life, because I think that's important. It's really great to hear a speaker go through the steps and hear their experience, but I also think it's really important to hear, what are they doing now? How's life getting? You know, it gets really lifey, right? And how do you deal with those things, right? You know, am I applying this program or am I not? And I am not perfect by any means. And I have to keep learning and redoing. But anyway, I just want to share this quick story, if I can. I happened to see Paul at a picnic, and he was just sharing an experience with me. And I'm not going to go into detail because you know, that's his business. But it was something around giving his daughter a car. And the car, someone had stole the car and smashed it up. And I guess I am telling the story. And then somehow, you know, Paul was trying to do the right thing, but at first he wasn't. But then he was with this young man who totaled the car. And then he was reminded of something that he did. And while he's telling me this story, it reminded me of something I did while I was, you know, drinking and drugging. And that was, I stole a car. I never made amends for it. I totally forgot about it. And I thought I was done with my amends. Check, 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 because that's the kind of person I am. But it's funny how amends work, because they just keep popping up. You know, 12 and a half years in the program, they still pop up. And so that reminded me that I stole a car. And, you know, now I have a new sponsor. I call my sponsor, and he's like, you need to make restitution. And I'm like, what do you mean? Oh, my God, I have to make restitution. I stole a car. Well, the car was pretty much a beater. I mean, I have to admit, it was old. It was rickety. it probably wasn't worth much. But I I don't even remember what garage I took it from because I was walking to school and I thought it was a good idea to just steal a car and go to school because it was raining outside. So, yeah, this is the stuff I would do when I was high. So I did that, and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to take the car, and I'm going to park it two blocks away from the school, and I'm just going to take it to school so I could get to school on time, and that's all that's going to happen from this. And all I could do is think about the car when I was at school. I want to go out, and I want to go drive that car, I want to drive that car. You know, I don't have a car, I don't have a license, I'm probably 16, and I'm excited because I want to go do this. So I go back out and I take the car and I think I call one of my friends up and we start driving around the Lehigh Parkway. We're driving around and driving around and driving around. And, you know, we're doing neutral drops and doing all kinds of stuff. And next thing you know, the car doesn't work, right? Surprise. So you know, we get out of the car and just run home. And that was the end of it. That was the end of it. So anyway, back to talking to my sponsor about this, and you know, this is, I don't know, 35 years ago, maybe even more, who knows, and the people don't live there, I'm sure, and my sponsor said, you need to make restitution, and I'm like, ah. So immediately I thought of someone that needed a car, I'm going to get a beater, I have some money in my savings, this is the last thing I want to spend my money on. But, you know, we have to be rigorously honest, right? I have to go to any lengths. So I'm like, my sponsor said, you know, pray on it. Well, the minute he told me that I had to make restitution, I was thinking in my mind, who do I want to buy a car for? And my ego it's feeding my ego, right? And I know immediately who I want to buy a car for, immediately. And, you know, I wait a little bit, you know, because I still don't want to spend the money. And I'm like, how much do I have to spend? And where can I find this car? I'm hunting it on Craigslist. And actually, I have a friend that's helping me find it on Craigslist, you know, something on Craigslist. And in the meantime, my friend happens to go out. So I'm like, so I can't give them the car, right? Because now my plan's foiled. It's like, damn. So I go back to my sponsor. I said, well, the person that I wanted to give it to, you know, is, they went out. And he's like, all right. He goes, would you pray on this and see what comes to you? And I'm like, ah. So I did. I started praying on it. You know, I go on Facebook at night and I read Facebook. And so it's probably about 2 weeks later, and I read this Facebook message. It was somebody that I used to go to high school with, and she has MS, and she states on there that she didn't have a car for a year and a half, and she's having a really, really hard time getting to doctor appointments, and she doesn't want to ask people and be a pain in the neck. And that was my answer. I'm like, that's who I have to do this for. So, and then my sponsor said, buy it and you cannot tell her it's you. And I was like, how do you do that? How do you buy a car and not be involved in all that? So the person that was helping me do this, he was actually in the car business, so he was able to arrange all of this. And we were able to deliver this car to her. Actually, he delivered this car to her. And to this day, she doesn't know who gave her that car. So that was supposed to keep me right-sized because I wanted to take an amends and shout it from the hilltops. And actually, I am to you, but to that person who I gave it to, you know, I wanted to take that credit. And I'm glad I didn't. I really am. I'm glad I didn't. So I have a couple more minutes. And so some of the things that I'm discovering about myself, most recently, you know, I told you about that relationship that I was in. It was 7 years. And actually, we ended up being together for 15 years, but that ended. And I feel like I'm not even quite sure why it ended. You know, did I get bored? Did my spirit fall a little asleep while I was back in AA? I don't know. But for whatever reason, it ended. And, you know, I started dating other people. And most recently, I was in a relationship. And that just ended over Thanksgiving. And, you know, while it was sad, I feel like it was a blessing, because something I didn't realize was that, you know, not only was I addicted to drugs and alcohol, but I feel like I'm addicted to people and I'm addicted to relationships. And I didn't know that, because I've been in a relationship from ever since I was 15 to fast forward to now I'm 51. That whole entire time I've been in a relationship. And for this past month and a half, I haven't. And I'm not looking. And it was brought to my attention that, you know, that I'm possibly a codependent, and I'm addicted to relationships. So I am seeking help for that in another fellowship. And that was the last thing I wanted to do. You know, I called my sponsor and I said, you know, this is what I'm going through. And my sponsor said, call Al-Anon. And I'm like, oh, no. You know, that's the last thing I want to do is call Al-Anon. You know, you don't know how long it took me to get to these steps. And, you know, it's just like, God, shoot me now. I'm so grateful that he made me do that, because I picked up the phone and I called someone Thanksgiving, a number that he gave me, an Al-Anon person, and they were talking exactly, they were telling me their story, and it was very, very similar to what I was going through. So I'm thinking I might be a double winner, you know, AA and Al-Anon. I can't believe it. But it's really invigorating too, to know that this is who I was, and I can get better. I can get better. You know, like I could put down the drink and the drug, you know, now I could I'll be able to put down people. And you know, here's another thing that I like to do too, is the New Year's comes, right? And I don't really necessarily like to label things as resolutions, but more as goals. Right? And I do this every year. Every, you know, January 1st, I actually pull out my old goal list. I take a look at it. And you know, if I hit 50% of the things on my list, if I achieve those, I feel very lucky, very, very lucky. So I pulled it out, and I had to drag some over to, you know, this year. And some keep getting drug over from year to year to year to year. But that's okay. That's okay. But I make a goal list. And, you know, some of those things that are on there that are repeats are, I have to do a spiritual retreat every year. I love to do that. I have to visit somewhere new, you know, somewhere I have never been before. I love to do that. You know, those are some of the things that I put on my, my goal list. Take a cooking class. You know, I don't put on there, I need to be the CEO of my company, or I need to win the lotto, or anything like that. You know, I put things on that are attainable, you know, and that are going to stretch myself a little bit. And, you know, I did a fun exercise. I thought it was a fun exercise. I had a January 1st, you know, the pork and sauerkraut dinner, and I had a bunch of friends over, and I gave everybody a pen and paper, and I said, okay, well, we're going to do our goal list for, you know, 2016. Yeah. But it was fun. And, you know, most people partaked, you know, maybe some didn't, but it's just a good way to start your year, for me. And one of those things was meditation. I really wanted to expand my meditation. And, you know, I just jumped into it. January 2nd, I went to a 4-hour meditation class. Yeah, I don't mess around. It was 6 different types of meditations I learned. It was really cool. And then a mindfulness class, a 21-day mindfulness class that I'm doing now that I just started last Wednesday. And that's really interesting. I'm meditating every day, 30 minutes, and then I have to do like a little mindful exercise. But it's been really extraordinary, these things that I'm doing. So, you know, and the opportunities that I have, one more thing I'm going to say, and I'm going to close with this. So I work virtual. I work from home, and I've been doing this for probably about 3 years. And every winter that comes around, I'm like, God, why do I have to sit in this house in Pennsylvania to do this work? It's just, why do I do this? I want to go somewhere warm. I could work from anywhere in the United States. So, you know, I finally set up this Florida thing. I have a friend who lives in Florida. They're going to move out of their place, move in with their boyfriend, and let me rent their place for 2 months. I mean, that is an awesome, awesome thing for me. I was going to go down with this person that we recently split up with. And the old me would have just canceled everything. Okay, I'm not going. I don't want to go by myself. I'm scared. I'm full of fear. But I'm going, and I'm looking so forward to that. I really am. I have my buddy Jamie going down with me. He's going to drive down with me, and then he's going to fly back a couple days later. So these are the things that are happening for me that definitely would not be happening for me if I was still drinking and drugging. And now, since I've recently just joined Al-Anon, I would not have done this by myself. So, I guess we're almost at the hour, and I'm running out of things to say. You know, there are two quotes that I wanted to say that just have been, that mean something to me. The one is, being in recovery does not mean immunity of pain. It means learning to take care of ourselves when we are in pain without a drink. And the other one is, Jack and I were actually at a big book, or I think it was Acts of Recovery, and this gentleman kept saying, there are no spiritual giants, but there are people who have had a giant impact on my spirit. And I believe that there have been many, many people in this program that had giant impacts on my spirit. And I hope I've had some impact on some other spirits. So if you're new, I think you're in the right place. If you related to any of my story, and if you're here for a while and you're in a dark place, I mean, just ask for help. And I know that comes not very easy for us, and it definitely didn't come for me, but we got to do it. We got to do it to save ourselves. So thanks for letting me share.